Welcome to the Product Podcast, brought to you by Product School, the podcast where you get fresh insight from leaders at top tech companies and startups. Remember, you can learn product management in person at our 15 campuses worldwide or study with us online. Visit productschool.com to learn more about our courses. You can also hang out with the leaders from these podcasts at our hundreds of annual events and catch us at ProductCon, the world's largest PM conference that takes place every year across the United States and in London.
So welcome, everyone. Today's session is about growth, product-led growth versus product marketing. How are they different? What are the similarities between them, and which companies use what strategy when they think about growth in general, which is thinking between product-led growth versus product marketing, or maybe they go hand in hand. So we have a very exciting panel in front of us today covering both the consumer side of the world and the business side of the world. On the business side, we have Chartio, Dave Fowler, the CEO and co-founder, who's joining us today. And we have the VP of product marketing, Xavier from Algolia, joining us on our panel today. Hi, Xavier. Hi, Dave. And on the consumer side, we have Anya, who is the former product lead on Spotify. And I'm your moderator, Mayank. I'll be curating and discussion and taking the discussion forward. I work on Facebook Marketplace as a product lead. So we'll do a quick intro for all of us, just one or two lines each, and then dive into the discussion right away. I can quickly start with my intro and then go roundtable. Cool. So I'm Mayank. I'm a product lead at Facebook Marketplace, working on their C2C and B2C products for marketplaces globally. Been here for about 4 years. And before that, worked on other companies, which are very marketplace focused, like Uber, eBay, and some startups in New York. Yeah. Xavier, do you want to go next and give a short intro?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much, and Mayank, and really pleased to be joining you all today. So my name is Xavier Mazabal. I lead product marketing at Algolia, and I've been in B2B tech for about 21 years. Some of the notable companies are Salesforce, Dropbox, Google Cloud, and now Algolia. For me, my journey into product marketing came from being a consultant and a pre-sales engineer, and then really got passionate about evangelizing, telling the product story. So that's a little bit about my background.
Thanks, Xavier. Welcome. Anya, do you want to go next?
Sure. I'm excited to be here. Curious to talk about all our different opinions about product versus market-led growth. I am currently kind of doing an independent thing. I am advising and consulting a lot on product, especially trying to focus on earlier stage startups. I'm actually teaching with the product school as well. So I teach the intro product management course. And previously, my last full-time role was at Spotify, where I was focused on building tools and software services for the music industry. And before that, I was at Microsoft, and I was focused on all things Minecraft.
Brilliant. Thank you. Thank you so much, Anya. Welcome. Dave, you want to go next?
Yeah. Pleasure to be here. I'm Dave. I'm the founder and CEO of Chartio. I'm a very product-focused CEO. I've been working in data and SaaS for almost a decade now. And just very obsessed, very focused on at Chartio, making it so anybody in the company, not just data teams, can explore and understand the data. Solving those problems and a lot of experience both trying to go enterprise and SMB, being product led, being product marketing led, and so excited to chat about that with you guys today.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Super excited to be in this group, having a very exciting conversation in front of us. So I think I was wondering, how should we start? And then I thought, what's the Uber goal? The Uber goal for all of us is growth. So I would like to start with how each of you have thought about growth, either in your current role or in the previous role. Just a quick intro on that, which can cover the overall growth strategy for the product that you have seen. And after that, we start deep diving into the two things that we're discussing today, which are product-led growth versus the marketing growth that you're talking. So I will kick it off to start with, let's go with Anya first this time. Anya, do you want to talk about how have you approached product growth in the past in any of the companies you work with? Just love to hear from you about that.
So when I tend to focus on product growth is because I think the last role that I was really working and focused primarily on growth, user focused or revenue focused, was actually during my time in Minecraft. A lot of my time at Spotify was spent on trying to find product market fit for pivoting into these new services. So generally what I would say is, especially since I was consumer focused when we were talking about video games and users, right? A lot of that growth was towards the mature stage of my product. Minecraft was already the number one top selling game. So I tended to focus a lot on what particular feature or product we were focusing on and what would be the right way to go in terms of having it take on more of a marketing focus versus more of a product-led focus. For example, when we were focused on growing the marketplace, we really wanted to drive a lot of organic interest in what we call DLC, the downloadable content, like skins for your character and skins for your world that we were offering to players. And we knew that we had a very naturally involved community that grew organically, thanks to YouTube. So we focused a lot on meeting the users' needs, on doing focus groups and user interviews, which I would call more product-led growth, focusing a lot on the initial stage of figuring out which products would be the most relevant for them, which ones would get the most organic traction with our users. Whereas when we were pursuing partnerships with other brands, for example, we would partner with the likes of Disney on Star Wars and make those kinds of downloadable content. For our users, we would focus a lot more on making sure that we had a solid launch plan, our product marketing would lead in partnering with the other brands, and really making sure that the awareness is there, because there, the opportunity was on the tail end to include new users that aren't initially considering or aware of Minecraft perhaps, but are aware of the other brand that we're partnering with. So we focus a lot more on the tail end and making sure we had solid planning in terms of capitalizing on the marketing momentum.
Awesome. Thanks, Anya. Anya, just to confirm, you broke up a little bit. So the not much though. So the product you're talking about is the Microsoft game that you worked on, right? And was it what was the name? What is the game again? I missed that.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry. 5 second quick background. Minecraft. So
Minecraft, of course. Yeah.
Minecraft is a really popular game. It was initially developed by an indie studio in Sweden, and Microsoft had acquired the game studio.
We all love Minecraft, I'm sure. Okay. So I think two interesting points that you call out here was, number one, the stage of the product also matters. So it's not about we can deploy anything we want. It's to evaluate where, what stage the product is in. So it was a mature product that you worked on. That's number one for all of viewers. The phase is important. And second is, you split very well between both product-led marketing and product-led growth and marketing, where it sounded like for your specific product, a lot of awareness was done through marketing. And then you had this organic product, which you were understanding through research to figure out how can you grow it once you have people coming into it. Is that a right framing on how you approach your overall growth for Minecraft?
Yes. And if I were to characterize it a little bit like more generically, I would say, so it's not only the stage of your product, but it's also whatever you're currently focused on launching or building, what stage in the product development lifecycle you're at, right? Ideally, you're thinking about this before you even start brainstorming or you start prioritizing what opportunities of what you want to build, because it's based on the goals of what you have for it, right? What is your intention for prioritizing to launch and to build this thing? Is it to grow awareness? Is it to grow users? Is it to fulfill user needs and pain points? Because that can inform whether you want to focus more on product-led growth or marketing-led growth.
Yeah, I completely agree with this. Like, the setting the goal is super important, and then that we can figure out what exactly, which direction we should be going, and also helps the team to brainstorm the right direction, because I think all are cool ideas. Like, focusing on a community for gaming, amazing. Focusing on a marketing plan, we all want to do that, but aligning on the goal is super important. Awesome, thank you. We'll come back to Minecraft in a bit. Dave, you had a point, go for it.
Yeah, I was gonna call just like to bring some conflict early, which makes things more interesting. You know, the premise of the first question, you know, you started with, and this is great coming from a Facebook person, is saying, of course, growth is the main goal. So what do you guys do? That's not always the main goal, especially depends on what phase you're at. And so for us, like, you know, we're really trying to create this big innovation, and we're really trying to enable a piece of technology that, like, in a working that wasn't hasn't been possible before. So, you know, Excel's been around for 38 years now. Anybody can use Excel, but as soon as data gets bigger than a spreadsheet, you got to learn SQL and or really complicated BI products. And so we want to make it so anybody can do that with the same ease of Excel. And so there's a lot of like fundamental like UX problems in there. There's a lot of technical problems, a lot of obstacles. And we have actually like a 40-page document called the problems to solve to really join people on data. That's what we call our mission, join people on data. You know, so there's an extensive set of problems and, you know, thinking about growth and integrating that and the whole sign up is definitely part of it. And obviously we get growth the closer we get to that and the more problems we solve. But it's not always the main focus, obviously, of every product team.
That's a very good point. And I think when I said growth as a Uber goal, I meant if your Uber goal is growth, then we have these two paths we can take, or maybe it's one path with two elements. I think what you just said is a very interesting point, which again aligns with Anya's point where we have to consider where in the life cycle of the product we are at and what should we focus on. So it could be the growth is the long-term growth would come, maybe the growth will come in 2 years or 1 year, what milestone we should achieve in the next near term, and what is the strategy for that? And it could be product-led growth, or it could be product marketing, or maybe none, and focus just on building and solving for the users. Absolutely fair. But the core point, I think I completely agree, is on the stage also matters. Define where you are at that stage and pick the right goal that you should focus on, which may or may not be growth in near term versus long-term growth plan. So totally, I completely agree with that. Thank you for bringing that nuance there. Awesome. Any thoughts from you, Xavier, on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think from my perspective, obviously I'm a little bit more in the B2B space. Algolia, we're software as a service, or search as a service, I should say rather. Mm-hmm. We service about 9,000 customers and, you know, run the gamut from SMB to mid-market enterprise. From our perspective, what does growth feel or look like? Like we're definitely in a crowded market in the sense that there's a lot of competitors in certain niche areas of what search is related to, such as e-commerce. So for us, growth is a lot about like mindshare with customers, like customers adopting additional features that will give them more capabilities. In our world, it's talking about conversion and talking about uplift in sales and more activity on search on their site. So those are the kinds of things that we think about. It's kind of both like, you know, revenue growth, but also like going deeper with customers and also unboxing more features whereby they can get more value. And the more adoption we get for those features and the value from the customers, the more we're sure we're on the right path, or we can further our efforts to develop a product, say towards personalization or AI capabilities, than maybe other capabilities. So it kind of helps us. I think growth is like a mutual dialogue with the market, and where you establish some goals, but you also need to continually have your ear to the ground with customers, with prospects, with your sales teams, in the B2B space at least, to really understand what's resonated and what isn't, right?
That's very good. So I think I'll extract some of the learnings from myself on the B2B side as well, from this talk of yours. Like, I think what you're saying is the type of marketing could be different as well, where you go and show the case studies that are outcome-based results that have been shown in the previous sort of use cases that you have seen success, which is a different strategy than going all out and do a pretty big marketing campaign. That's how you sort of bring the people to your product. And that has to happen, obviously. But along with that, let's call it is that product marketing for you? Will that be the right way to look at the bucket? Okay, awesome. And the second bucket is still there, which is the product-led growth, which may not be instant, or it may not be changing a button to green from to blue to see the impact right away. However, learning from them and going back and influencing the roadmap to come back with a much more long-term impact. So there's a constant cycle that also goes in with the B2B, with the businesses to understand the needs. So again, it feels like they go hand in hand, like both for if it's consumer or it's B2B, they're always, scenarios have product-led and product marketing going hand in hand.
Interesting. I agree. And I just add, like, I talked a lot about companies and customers. Obviously, developers are a massive part of what we do as well. So that's probably closer to a more product-led type organic adoption, if you will. So that's also super important for us to keep in mind and to make sure we're easy to understand what we do, to sign up for a trial, to get up and running. So that's probably closer to some of the other freemium or B2C style products out there.
Awesome. That's very interesting. But even for developers, I think there has to be... Go ahead, Anya, you're saying something?
Oh, I was going to say, since you did mention changing the color of a button, that is not to be understated when it comes to product growth. A/B testing of a button or drawing attention to an upsell screen can have huge impact overnight just by testing some of those small iterations. Yeah. And that's totally product-led.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think those are the first things we would love to focus on, because that's what the biggest wins comes from, making it easy to increase the visibility of the product with the users. I completely agree. Thank you for calling that out. Awesome. Dave, do you want to say anything about Chartio on how you guys think about growth in general? Yeah.
I mean, you were just kind of getting into a framework of how to think about product marketing and product-led growth. And I think product marketing is definitely a big part, an important part of product-led growth. You know, product marketing, the positioning, the messaging you have to people, how it all fits. But I think you can also, in a lot of companies and most of my competitors, have a lot of product marketing, but not product-led growth. So there's also that world, especially in like enterprise sales and enterprise-led companies that don't have a self-sign-up flow. You still have a lot of product marketing there, but so product marketing can live independently of product-led growth, but it's also a part of product-led growth. That kind of makes sense.
Yeah, I totally agree. When I was just thinking about the topic of this panel in general, I was almost a bit confused, because I don't see why you need to differentiate so much, especially since I've been consulting in startups that are a little bit further on. They tend to obsess about being able to attribute impact and value back to a certain function or a certain team. But I mean, the best product development or the best product growth is collaborative, and it shouldn't matter whether it's technically marketing or product-led growth. And in my case, the best practice is for both parties to be involved throughout the product development lifecycle. So marketing should be involved and think about product marketing-led growth as you're brainstorming and prioritizing what to build. And product should certainly be involved in that conversation as well. And then later on at the end of the product development lifecycle, you're thinking about the product launch plan. And content marketing, or how you'd want to make sure that your users, customers are aware, you'd also want both parties involved.
Yeah. To summarize that, maybe the real, the alternative to product-led growth is kind of sales-led growth, and which does heavily rely on product marketing, and other people can kind of associate that. But I think a huge part of sales-led growth is product marketing. But I think product marketing is kind of the one that transitions and stays with you even as you move to, as more and more companies move to product-led growth, as more and more new companies, and that becomes an increasingly popular way to bring a product to market. But product marketing kind of like persists through and works for both.
Yeah, I think I'll add one more nuance there. I mean, I completely agree with both of you. Like, the products I've worked with, it's never marketing growth or product growth. It's one growth team that works on the problem, which could be either a long-term problem or a short-term problem based on where the product is at that point of time. And we all bring in the team together, marketing folks, engineering, research, design, everyone, and form a core team to address that, finding, understanding the situation, the opportunity, and then go work on it. Agree. I've seen a flip side of it also, which is primarily on traditional companies who are offline companies coming and now becoming online. So for instance, if you look at a Walmart in the past, I've spoken to a couple of people there, or some traditional offline, traditional non-online companies, if you will, they already had a marketing department, which was running marketing. And now comes technology and product. Oh, we have a new thing that we are working on, and we're to bring people into our website, into our app to do the conversion. They do see a nuance there a little bit, where the marketing team operates as a marketing team, whereas the product team has their own thing, and slowly they're blending in as well these days. But that's where we have seen some nuances in the market today. But I'm completely with you on that they are one thing together, but could be different roles to play for the same goal, which could be bring in more people and convert them. Okay, cool. So let's anchor on an interesting point that we all talked about, which is the stage of the product. Dave's product is a little bit early. They're disrupting a market. They're coming up with building the product. So what they need is different than what Anya needed in her Minecraft story, or what a Facebook, Uber / Google would need. And same goes for Algolia, where it's an established product with a lot of crowded space. How do you create your, navigate your way? So the question is, do you think as we're starting, I'll start with Dave. So basically you are building a product, still like it's not a huge product yet. You don't have a big market share. So you're still growing, you're still building the product towards showing it to the users. Where do you think about growth coming from in the near term? Do you think about A or B first? So do you think about, I should first focus on building the right product, so product-led growth, like let the product speak for itself, or you think about, no, I will do some marketing and see how it does and then move forward. Is there any sort of preference? Because see, as you become large, it's easier because you have luxury of, you know, resources to play both the games. I think in the early stage, a little different. I'd love to hear from you on that.
So just to be clear too, actually, Chartio's been around for almost a decade. We're actually older than Algolia, and but at the same time, we're still really, really innovating a lot, and there's still in data, like, you know, we're a big part of the data stack, and there's just a lot to build and continue to build. There's a lot of competitors out there that have like three to 500 to 1,000 developers and huge marketing teams and stuff like that. So there's always kind of this battle between, yeah, like the self-serve motion, also building things that really differentiate, that really stand out in a complicated product, such as a business intelligence product. It's always kind of a struggle and a balance. We had about, like this quarter, we had a bit of people focused on both. So we had a lot of people really focused on, about two-thirds of the people really focused on some of the big innovations we've done, which has brought like collaboration and commenting to dashboards. We also just launched in March and continue to work on it, what we call Visual SQL. We basically took SQL, which is the most powerful way to work with data, and we made a visual version of it so that really anyone can do it. We did a ton of user testing and prototyping to do that. So a huge amount of effort into kind of bringing that innovation and really proving to ourselves and to others that this is a product that now 8 out of 10 people that we user test this with can intuitively make charts themselves, where every other product we've tested was only 1 out of 10. So a lot of time and effort getting into those innovations that you have to be really confident about putting that much time and effort into an innovation. Is this what some people really want? And for us, we definitely heard a lot from our customers. And also, it's just kind of the thesis and the mission of ourselves as a company. And so really putting a lot of resources on that makes a lot of sense. But then about a third of our company on the product and edge side was very much focused on, you know, that sign-up experience, that self-sign-up flow, which in business intelligence is also very hard, because the first thing you have to do when you come in, it's not that useful unless you kind of connect your data up to it. Pretty technical challenge to do that, to like, hey, go connect your Redshift or your Postgres or your Segment. And so making that really easy, making that really seamless for people as much as possible. And also, you know, having some support people there to help them if they hit any curbs. And we were able to make a really big impact this past quarter on those numbers. And so it is a combo of both focusing on that innovation and the product-led growth, and they really feed each other as well. Like, you know, us solving our mission is a big part of us getting to our growth and getting really differentiated in a pretty noisy space.
So I think I'll rephrase the question and let Xavier and Anya jump into that. So I think, how do you balance features that are good for growth versus features that customers are asking for? I mean, you answered that very well for Chartio, I think, where you focus, it seems, more on the... Go ahead, Dave. Do you want to jump in?
I'll add a third category to that, which is like features that customers will love, but maybe aren't asking for, like innovations. And so that's also a really hard one to figure out and balance.
Sure. So I'll put them in the one bucket, solving customer problems, and whether it comes from them or we go identify by, you know, our research, versus a growth feature or a set of growth features. So how do you balance between them? How do you prioritize? I'll go like with Anya, Xavier, and then Dave again. You can jump in if you have some last thoughts from Chartio. Anya, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I love this question. I think the answer to this could certainly be a bit different if you're focusing on consumer versus B2B. So thinking about the consumer side, particularly, maybe I'll talk about both. So with Minecraft, I mentioned that we had a really, really passionate user base and community. They were super involved, super active on reporting bugs. We had a huge beta testing player base. And what that resulted in terms of really knowing your audience and knowing your users is, for us, it was super important to always deliver on features that were in demand by users, right? They were super involved. They were convinced they knew what they wanted. If they wanted to add every single animal in existence and maybe even made up as a mob into the game, at some point we had to make sure that they felt heard. And even if it wasn't every single update, every single feature, we included something that they were demanding, we had to give them a roadmap and insight. It was very important for us to feel like they were heard. And that was both focused on and identified from the product side as well as the marketing side. It was in every function's and everyone's best interest to do that, just reflecting on the community that we had. And abstracting that a little bit, even thinking about how we were prioritizing what we were building for the music industry, particularly independent artists at Spotify, this was also always a tug and play, because we knew there were some things that would help give us growth. We knew there were things that we can put in that would make their lives easier and would help us onboard new users faster, since we were earlier on in the product lifecycle stage, right? We were just trying to find product market fit. Mm-hmm. But if we didn't include the need to have features that artists considered important, the things that they were focused on in their day-to-day that they would find the most relevant in order to switch, in order to adopt, in order to reconsider the product, then we would be losing them. So for example, promotion was the hardest thing to solve in that point in time in the music industry. Still could be, especially in the streaming space. And that was the must-have whenever we spoke to any of our users, any partners within the music industry, particularly in the independent space, because they lacked access to promotion. And we wanted to focus on democratizing promotion, and it was a super hard problem to solve. So we would have preferred not to start there, but we mm-hmm. found that it was a must-have if we were to include growth as a goal for us and to really reach a relevant user base.
So I think it's great. Two good insights which I will extract from this would be, one, focus more on knowing the user segments first. So that's like top of the pyramid in terms of learning what we have to learn. And second is, for those segments, let's go solve the user problems. And if we are doing that, the growth will happen by itself. And then we can think about amplifying that with marketing, which you didn't add, but I'm asking, is that how you would think about it?
Yes. And if we focus specifically on the question of, do you prioritize, you know, what you want to build in your needs versus what your customers are asking for, the answer is that it's a delicate balance and you have to know what's important for your users. I would advise everyone, if you're planning a roadmap, if you're planning sort of a handful of feature releases, updates months out, you should always be thinking about including things that are coming up from your community. You want them to feel involved. You want them to feel heard. And the more that you can make them feel that way, even if it's just a minor bug fix, the more engaged your user base will be, which is the name of the game these days for a lot of SaaS products, B2B or B2C.
Yeah, awesome. Absolutely. I kind
Xavier,
of
Xavier, do you want to add? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, sure. I think there's a couple of buckets, right? When you think about the way we think about product development, part of it is like a competitive play where you look at what gaps you have in the market, you track them effectively with your solutions architects or your technical teams about what are the things customers are telling you that, you know, we have or need or don't have, and we need to develop to come up to parity with the market. Doing a lot of analysis on win-loss analysis of opportunities we won or lost, and surveying folks after the fact to understand we might have blind spots, or we might think that a particular feature is a real leader when actually it's kind of a laggard compared to others, right? And getting that objective feedback is really important. And then I think on the topic about, you know, leading with a new product evolution, like building something for the customer before they even know that it's a requirement for them, I think that's an important approach as well. The way we kind of balance that is we kind of have three pillars that guide our thoughts, right? If first of all, if our mission is to enable any company to build compelling search and discovery experiences, we think about it through three lenses. We think about it, what does it mean for the end user? Someone like one of the 600 million users worldwide who interact with an Algolia search at least once a month. Like, what do they expect? What kind of dynamism, what kind of easy to understand UI should a front end that's offering a search give them? Then we think about the developers, like what's the least road of friction for them to use our product? How do they get most productivity? I had to laugh earlier or when Dave was talking about, you know, trialing a product and the first thing you have to do is upload data. That's exactly the same in our space for search as a service. And we want to obviously make that frictionless. And we want to talk to developers with the frameworks that they know, the UI paradigms that they're familiar with, the backend clients that they want to use, right? And then the third pillar is around the business user. So where do we want to play? How do we want to make sure that if, for example, we're selling to e-commerce and you have people that are responsible for the site experience, and then you have product merchandisers who are folks who are category owners or really concerned about the merchandising of the search, how do you fit their needs effectively? And how do you make them really driving business performance? So I think those are some of the elements. And also, who do you want to be in the market? Who do you want to be when you grow up, right? So in our space, the two big paradigms are open source or package solution. And we're definitely kind of somewhere in the middle, right? Because we give a lot of deep customization to developers, but we also want to make sure you don't need a massive army of developers to get started, right? That a generalist developer who's kind of a full stack can do many, many more things with Algolia than maybe other solutions. So I think those are some of the principles that kind of guide our thinking around, build a gap versus, you know, something to fix a gap versus build a net new product feature that someone hasn't even thought of yet.
Totally. And Xavier, I think the theme that's evolving from here, I'll come back, Dave, just in a bit. The theme that's evolving is, again, consistent with what Anya said. What you just did, you also have a very mature thinking about your user segments. You have three different set of users, they may have different needs, they may have different problems. So first of all, having that clarity is so important. I mean, I don't think every startup, obviously they take time to get there, but even every marketing person or a product leader has that clarity. Maybe they're missing something. I think investing in that understanding of the user segments is definitely step one. I feel quite consistent in both of your answers. And it's the same true for what I have been working on, that we have to understand the user segments first and then figure out what are the needs and then go on. Dave, I'll let you go. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, no, that was a great segue. I mean, this question is really complicated for us. And I think in the past, we've listened almost too much to our customers. And I hate saying that, it's not right. You should definitely listen to your customers as much as possible. But then I guess we weren't listening to the like all the customers. And who we hear the most from, you know, is our power users. There are a lot of people who use Chartio all day, and they're like, their job is to be a data scientist, data analyst inside the company. They're very technical, the power users. So also keeping in mind that we're really trying to build something for the business users as well. So a lot of these power users, they'd already know the workarounds, and they're used to the kinks in your product, the things that block other people from really adopting it. And they would, so they're requesting more things, or they're requesting maybe a feature that they saw your competitor has, so you end up, if you just follow all that, they're like, you know, make this map type or make that, you know, you can just end up making a clone of your competitor set out there, and nothing really differentiated. And we're trying to make something innovative and differentiated. So we really had it, where we had to go to was user tests, and do a lot of user tests on people just first trying the product, because so many people come in and you don't hear from the people who got confused and went away. You hear from the people that are those power users. So you got to also make sure, find some way to listen to those people, especially if you want product-led growth, because those people that are falling out of that funnel, you got to go hear from them. And so we did a much better job of that. Our channel was using user tests to get people like that to come try our product, and it helped tremendously.
Awesome. So let me, Dave, I'll extract something from this as well. I think what I'm hearing is it's possible you may be building for the wrong segment because you're not explored or spent more time understanding the entire ecosystem. So the moment you open that window and focus on understanding the entire ecosystem, you might find segments that are really product market fit for you and then go deeper in those. Is that a good way to frame your story?
Yeah. And finding that balance between like some things that are really going to help you drive more adoption and attract more people versus things that, just certain power users kind of want and maybe a lot are asking for. That's a tough balance because you really want to make those power users happy. You want to, and so ideally you raise a lot of money and do both. And sometimes, but everybody has some. You can't do all of it all at once, or things would be a lot different. But yeah, that's a tough challenge to figure out that balance, and it's an art, honestly. I don't know, I don't know if I have the best framework for it, but I do know that it's important to really well represent all the users and really keep in mind, especially if you want product-led growth, really keep in mind that onboarding experience and all the people really trying your product, not just the people who are already used to it.
One of the most exciting things for me about the growth stage was actually having the ability to kind of go back and then choose where you want to focus. Because when you're just getting something out there, you're cutting a lot of corners. It's MVP territory. Yeah. The onboarding experience is not the most you would have liked it. It might not be full featured, but the growth stage is where you decide where you want to double down and you get to go back and like fine tune some of those parts. And what we actually ended up doing at Minecraft is we would choose a theme. So it could be a quarter, it could be a particular update. And we would say, okay, for this one, we want to focus on new users and people that don't know how to play the game and wouldn't normally consider it. And for this one, we're going to go delight all the power obsessive players that spend all day playing. And that would kind of help us focus at least for a point at a time.
That's amazing. I totally agree on that, Anya, about a theme around a launch, or I think that's killer and definitely totally applicable.
And helpful for marketing.
So on that tactics on theme, I think it's a very good, we have also tried that before. It works really well. The other thing we have tried in the same concept of theme in my previous products and even current, sometimes we don't understand the problem, but we want to execute because you have to go do something as a team. It's a reality, like we all face that. And growth is similar. Like we all think doing ABC might give us instinctively that, especially in consumer side, because we all use the product. Let's go build this, let's go build that, and we might see some big wins. I think not doing that is very important. And what we call is an understand goal for the quarter or for the half. We say, team, go understand this half. It's okay to not build. It's okay to stop and understand. You always have two parallel tracks going on in that case. One that you don't know in your understanding, which will influence your next sort of sprint slash half quarter. And the other is execution. I think that mix has helped a lot, especially with growth. There are a lot of things like user segments for Facebook. Like we're working on buying and selling homes or cars on Facebook. We're trying to understand we can't be selling expensive cars or expensive homes on Facebook, but there are groups. But what are groups? What's happening there? And we had less insights there. So taking the understand goals to define the segments, and then to Zeta's your point, where do you want to be in that segment is super important. So I think that's a good framework. Number one, both goes hand in hand. Second, identify your user segments. I love that coming consistently from all of you. Then where you want to be in that segment, what experience or what kind of service or problem you want to solve for that segment, and then figure out the gaps to get there could be a good approach on how we sort of address growth overall for any product that we have seen so far. Is that a good summary of what we discussed so far? Okay, cool. Moving on. So we have some time left. I'd love to take some questions from the audience that we have got from Product School. So jumping right into questions, it's an interesting one coming in the COVID times. when selling a physical consumer product online, how does one go about a product-led growth approach? I would call it, how would one goes about growing their product? That's how I think about it. So you have a physical consumer product and you want to sell it online. How would you go about that? In terms of strategy, yeah. Who wants to take that?
I have no idea how to sell a physical product. So I would make it photogenic so it gets shared and viral on Instagram or something like that. Something people really want to, that'd be the viral loop of that product. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I could be a little cheeky and say you need great search and discovery, but laughing aside, I would say, finding the right channels where you think you have expansion opportunities with that particular product. Whether it's a social media play, whether it's an e-commerce play, whether it's another type of channel for getting the word out on your product and making it easy to buy. I guess, in any case, reducing friction, I think, is key, regardless of the channel that you're leveraging.
I don't have as much experience in terms of selling physical products. The two mm-hmm. anecdotes I can make is something that I've struggled with in terms of leadership and being open to trying new things, both at Minecraft and at Spotify, actually, is thinking mm-hmm. about, do you bring the users, your customers to you, or do you go where the customers are? And I think this is a really big problem when it comes to selling online for physical products. So for Minecraft, for example, our margins were much better if people came and bought the game from our websites versus selling it through Amazon or other marketplaces, etc. And similarly for Spotify with the Apple App Store, for example. I think this has become a physical and digital problem. And my answer is, I think you need to be open to trying, especially if, you've been hit with the pandemic, you weren't prepared, perhaps your online team's sales channels weren't the best, and you find yourself, between a rock and a hard place, you need to recognize where your strengths and your competencies are. Especially, I'm big on core competencies, where you want to continue investing and focusing. So maybe you might open yourself up to trying other channels, learning from those channels, really learning more about those types of customers that come in through those channels, and then figuring out and reevaluating how you want to double down on that.
I like that. I would rather also sell our framework that we all came up with today, which is, let's go understand who are your users. So define your user segments, which is very similar to what you just said, Anya. Go where your users are. So that's number one. Second is, what do you want to do? Where you want to be? If you're figuring out where exactly you want to be in the next couple of months would be important to figure out which investment goes where. So for instance, if you're a furniture store seller, you want to sell 10 furniture online, you don't have to set up a big store. You might just be well off running small ad hoc campaigns on Facebook or Google to get some people in and make the conversion just through a phone call. So I think, again, defining user segments, understanding their needs and where you want to, how can you solve their problems, basically find the gap and then figuring out the channel which will help you solve that gap or bring those people into the product will definitely help in this current time and also in future. So that's how I think traditionally companies have done in the past who have moved from offline to online. Okay, moving on to the next question, and I think we have time for this one, the last one. It's an interesting one. So what is the best way to do marketing, to do the first launch of a product? So they think of it as your, when you all started, I mean, Dave and Xavier as well, like you guys have seen journeys of all the products, and same with Anya. What do you recommend people start with as the first marketing launch?
I can maybe take a quick stab at that. And I'll caveat this by saying that I've never worked at a company that was launching a pure product from scratch. I've always come in where there was something established, but within those companies, we have launched net new products along the way. One element I think is important, and again, this is from a B2B lens, is like thought leadership. So if you're thinking about, for example, in our world, we do a lot of things around voice or natural language understanding, and those are kind of a little slightly more emerging technologies in the marketplace. And so one key element is really generating a lot of thought leadership and spending time with customers who are really passionate about the topic. So that's one thing I think is important to start to formulate what's going to be the broader message that will then resonate, which is that's one pointer that I found in terms of kind of an emerging product area.
Anya, Dave, do you want to go? Dave, go ahead.
Yeah, so I would say we just launched in March. It was like we've been working a year and a half on our visual sequel. We launched it. We bought a whole bunch of banners and booths and we bought lunch for everyone at the SASTR conference. But this was right when the pandemic came out. We actually launched on the day the pandemic was announced. All of our kind of like in-person conference launch plans went to the wayside. What worked is I wrote a really great story about how and why we built what we built. And it was a really great narrative, digging into the considerations a bit and the challenges and even my emotions going through it. At one point, I felt like I had disproven the mission that I've spent so much of my life on, that like business users won't be able to work with and write queries. And that was many months into it. And so I shared that. And so writing a story about it, I think is important. Put yourself in it, put the journey in it, and let people come along with that. Especially your first version of the product won't be perfect. And so asking people, but telling them where you want to go and asking them to come along for the ride, they'll be a lot more forgiving. They'll be a lot more excited about it. I also like to take I think I live here in San Francisco near Napa County. I sometimes when I really want to look at good marketing, I go up to do some wine tastings, and the people there just, everybody's got the same bottle, different label on it, tastes a little bit different. And the salesmanship they have there of like the stories they put into that wine, the romance they put in, these were imported from here and here's the story of the person who started this vineyard. That's what people are really buying and taking home. And they're sharing that at a dinner party that they're going to and like, oh, I got this, blah, blah, blah. So putting the story into your product, I think that's something people really connect with and can be a big way, especially as you're starting out and launching something. People love seeing that. People love the journey part of that, sometimes even more than the actual product. So definitely utilize that.
Thanks, Steve. Do you have any last thoughts on this before I summarize?
Yeah, for sure. I had initially taken this question from a product perspective. So in terms of what you'd want to do when planning for like an initial launch of a new product as a product manager or product lead, let's say. So the first thing kind of when the way we've been using the framework that you've so helpfully put together, Mayank, is knowing your audience. In this case, knowing your product. How big is this launch? How big is this product? And planning, making a launch plan that's commensurate, but first have a launch plan, ideally together with marketing and product, and as well as other stakeholders. You want to make sure support, everyone is included. That said, if it is super important, especially if it's like your first big product, you want to have a strike team, you want to be meeting with cross-functional stakeholders days, weeks, even months leading up to the launch. We were planning a huge launch when we were doing our initial beta product at Spotify to allow independent artists to upload music directly. We had this war room and strike team for months before we launched. And leading up to the big launch, we were literally meeting in a war room daily. So the other thing is maybe you want to have a war room, and that means like everyone in there ready to plan at the last minute, coordinating when you're turning the product on, when you're letting users in, when you're launching your blog posts, coordinating with PR and press, etc. And then additionally, as a part of that plan, also really encourage having engineers on hand for support. Inevitably, there will be hot fixes. There will be bugs that come up, as much bug squashing as you think you've done. So being prepared to do that weeks leading up to the launch, and obviously during the week that you first launched and users are flooding in. And if it's possible, even thinking about having an alpha beta testing group so that you're removing a lot of these surprises beforehand. The more you can quietly, if possible, get it into the hands of your users and your customers to test and play around with beforehand, it will make for a much smoother launch. So test, and test as much as you can. And I think someone else mentioned this already, but know what your goals are. So when you initially started working on launching this product, you may have long-term KPIs that you're tracking, but particularly for the launch, what are the initial signals you'll be looking for to know that it's headed in the right direction? How will you evaluate the launch momentum in itself? And knowing when you have to play interference, if some of those initial indicators are, you know, showing warning. And finally, have an easy way for your customers to give feedback. Sometimes those processes can be really buried if you're not really giving them the kind of easy formatting and ways to submit it, and you're just giving them an email address. A lot of them won't take the initiative and the time to go that extra route to make it as easy for them as possible.
Like, that covered a whole roadmap, Anya. Thank you so much. Very, very useful. Awesome. We are at time. This was a very, very interesting conversation. Thank you so much. I would summarize our framework for our viewers so that they can use it and go and do the road mapping based on that, if it's useful. So I think the conclusion, as I'm hearing, is so far based on our conversation is the product-led growth and marketing, they go hand in hand. It's not one or the other. The team should work together. It's the power of that cross-functional team that creates a very impactful outcome that we want. So that's what we have discussed as a team, as four of us together here. In terms of what are the steps to move forward when you think about growth, what you learn from this group is, number one, know your audience. And how you do that, go define the user segments. If you don't have them, take an understand goal, focus on it, define them. Second is, for those segments, where do you want to be? So if to Xavier's point, like for his app developers, what exactly you want to solve for them, or what is the North Star you want for them? So define those goals for each user segments. The third thing is, now figure out the gaps between where you want to be versus where you are, and solve for the problems the users have, either by hearing them, to Anya's point, to Dave's point, or by proactively doing research to figure out the ones that could be opportunities which users may not have thought of. And that becomes our roadmap to go execute. The last thing is, when all this works, if you think adding money and more marketing can amplify the impact, add more money, add more marketing, amplify the impact, double your goal, double your impact from the overall initiative that you're running. So I think that's pretty much what we all have been doing so far, I think, and we have learned in phases, but putting it together in this 4-point system will really help our viewers to go back and use it for their own products. So thank you so much for this lovely talk. I really appreciate the time.
Thank you, Maya.
Thanks so much.
It was a pleasure.
You guys had great points, and Mike, you did a great job.
Bye, guys.
Thank you for listening to the Product Podcast. If you like this episode, don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. For more product insights, head over to productschool.com.